It's time now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker is Dr. DeWitt Jones, Chairman Emeritus of the Division of Speech Communication at BJU. The title of his message is My Rock of Refuge. The text is from Psalm 31.
As we begin this morning, we need just a moment of orientation. There are both advantages and disadvantages to bow ties. One of the advantages of a bow tie is that it is very difficult to spill soup or gravy on it unless you slobber or drool a great deal. On the other hand, bow ties won't always stay straight. Sometimes they get twisted one way or the other. Now, fortunately, this one tends to stay a little straighter than some of the others. I've worked on that because it's a problem as the individual of knowing whether this bow tie is straight or not. So I've thought about several possibilities. One is attaching a little mirror to my glasses. Some cyclists have those that attach here and look back, and that way I can see whether, but that, I don't know, it looks a little tacky. This is the best idea that I've had. I haven't quite gotten it developed yet, but I'm working on it. You've seen people at parties at Christmas at other times. They'll have bow ties that light up. They have a battery in their pocket, and you press the button. The thing does this kind of number. Well, what I thought about is a carpenter's level behind it with an electrical circuit that would connect whichever way the bubble was going with a charge in either leg. So if it went in one direction, I know it was over here or over there. But I still got some more work to do on that one. We're getting there. So the best solution I have, the best solution at this point, is just shift responsibility, which is always a good tactic when you're not sure what to do. So consequently, I put the responsibility on you. So if it gets going one way or the other, it's out of level, and it's really bugging you, then just lean in that direction. Okay? So when I see everyone in here all leaning and falling out of your seats, I'll get a clue that there's a problem and make some adjustment, hopefully before you hit the floor. On the more serious side, however, this past weekend, Virginia Tech held its graduation. It was an attempt to incorporate both a celebration of the achievements of those students who were graduating, as well as recognition for all of those who lost their lives in the horrible incident of roughly a month ago. And while my heart goes out to all of those who were affected by that terrible disaster at Virginia Tech, as I listened to some of the students in the media presentations of what was said, and from the earlier time when they had the memorial services, some of the presentations that took place then, my heart was really saddened. Because on several different times, the response was, we are Hokies, and therefore everything is going to be okay. We are Hokies, and therefore everything is going to be okay. I understand the need at a time like that for a coming together, gathering support. But let me suggest to you this morning, when times of trouble come, when difficulties come to your life, whether those be financial difficulties, academic difficulties, medical difficulties, family difficulties, whatever they might be, you're going to need more than your alma mater to get you through. And it doesn't matter whether you are a graduate of Bob Jones University or Furman University or Clemson University or Winthrop. You need something more than a piece of paper and a fight song to get you through those kinds of difficulties. You need the everlasting God as your refuge. We want to look this morning at the experience of David, or at least David recounting his experience in Psalm 31, as he was experiencing trouble, but placing his trust and his confidence in the Lord. Psalm 31. In thee, O Lord, do I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in thy righteousness. Bow down thine ear to me. Deliver me speedily. Be thou my strong rock, for an house of defense to save me. For thou art my rock and my fortress. Therefore, for thy name's sake, lead me and guide me. Pull me out of the net that they have laid privily for me, for thou art my strength. Into thine hand I commend my spirit. Thou hast redeemed me, O Lord God of truth. I have hated them that regard lying vanities, but I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in thy mercy, for thou hast considered my trouble. Thou hast known my soul in adversities, and hast not shut me up into the hand of the enemy. Thou hast set my feet in a large room. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. Mine eye is consumed with grief, yea, my soul in my belly. For my life is spent with grief, and my years with sighing. My strength faileth because of mine iniquity, and my bones are consumed. I was a reproach among all mine enemies, but especially among my neighbors, and a fear to mine acquaintance. They that did see me without fled from me. I am forgotten as a dead man out of mind. I am like a broken vessel. For I have heard the slander of many. Fear was on every side. While they took counsel together against me, they devised to take away my life. But I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God. My times are in thy hand. Deliver me from the hand of mine enemies and from them that persecute me. Make thy face to shine upon thy servant. Save me for thy mercy's sake. Let me not be ashamed, O Lord, for I have called upon thee. Let the wicked be ashamed, and let them be silent in the grave. Let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak grievous things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. Oh, how great is thy goodness, which thou hast laid up for them that fear thee, which thou hast wrought for them that trust in thee before the sons of men. Thou shalt hide them in the secret of thy presence from the pride of man. Thou shalt keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he hath showed me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes. Nevertheless, thou heardest the voice of my supplications when I cried unto thee. O love the Lord, all ye his saints, for the Lord preserveth the faithful and plentifully rewardeth the proud doer. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all ye that hope in the Lord. The psalm has been called a psalm of trust growing out of lament. In other words, words of trusting while fully recognizing the danger. It is interesting that Jeremiah quotes from Psalm 31 and in fact takes the phrase from verse 13 where David says, fear was surrounding me, or fear was on every side. And six times Jeremiah uses that exact phrase. The exact circumstances of David when he writes this psalm are difficult to determine. It may be from an account that occurs in 1 Samuel chapter 23, where he goes to Keilah to drive away the Philistines, and the men of the city are planning to deliver him over to Saul. Or perhaps it's during the time of the rebellion of Absalom. David is deserted by many of his friends. He's forced to flee from Jerusalem. He is defeated, deserted, depressed, and humiliated. And perhaps that's the time that David is thinking about as he writes Psalm 31. But without a doubt, in the psalm, David is depending upon the Lord in his difficulty at the same time that he is crying out to God for assistance and help and strength. The theme, I think, is established in the first few verses. God is his rock of refuge. His rock. The phrase occurs in verse 2, where he speaks there of a strong rock. In verse 3, we have the rock once again. It occurs as a fortress in verses 2 and 3. We have the word a rock and my fortress. And so throughout, he is speaking of a refuge, of a fortress, of a place of security, and all of that is caught up in the idea of my rock, that which is solid, that which is strong. He says in verses 2 and 3, David says, be thou my rock. And then he says, thou art my rock. It's an interesting connection of phrases where he is asking and then he is saying, this is it. It is Spurgeon who says, learn from that, that we may learn to enjoy and experience what we grasp by faith. Thou art my rock, be thou my rock. You have learned a great deal in your classes, a good deal of knowledge about this book, about truths that are here, principles that are going to be helpful to you as you experience life. But it's a different matter to have that in your head and to know something about who God is and then to get into those experiences and be able to apply it. And that's what David is talking about there. Lord, I know you are my rock. Now, Lord, let me see that being demonstrated in this particular experience. But what does it mean when David says, thou art my rock? I think perhaps there are at least 5 different dimensions here that David could have in mind when he speaks of the Lord as his rock. Certainly, Scripture describes a rock as a place of shelter. Over in Isaiah chapter 32, it speaks of a rock as providing shade in a weary or a desert land. And when you're walking through the desert or you're out in a place where there's a lot of sunshine and there is no shade, you find a rock or you find a scrub bush or you find something that gives a little bit of shade. I've had a couple of experiences of being out in desert type of locales and temperatures that can reach 115, 120 degrees and there's not much shade. And let me tell you, you look for any kind of shade that you can find. And so here is a rock that provides some shade to get under and find relief from the sun. But I think primarily of these possibilities, it is the idea of a refuge and a fortress. And of course, this is what David talks about in these first 4 verses. It is also what he talks about over in Psalm 18. And in Psalm 18, once again, the Lord is his fortress. The Lord is his rock. It is a place of security. He is hiding and resting upon the rock. Several years ago, we traveled to Gettysburg. In fact, we went there several different occasions. And for any of you who've had an opportunity to tour the battlefield at Gettysburg, you no doubt remember Devil's Den and Little Round Top. And Little Round Top was a mound that was occupied by the Union forces. And the Confederate forces were more down in the valley. And so Little Round Top was a very strategic place. The Confederates had tried to take it, but the Union soldiers got there first. And the Confederates, however, were able to get into a large rock formation at the base of Little Round Top. In fact, that rock formation would be roughly the size of this stage up here and about the height of the proscenium. So you get some idea, and I don't mean just this part of the stage, I'm talking about going all the way back behind the curtain. And in that rock, there were large crevices so that people could move inside the rock and could stay there for long periods of time. And so what happened would be Confederate sharpshooters would get down in that rock, and one by one, they picked off the Union soldiers. Many officers lost their lives who were up on a Little Round Top because of the sharpshooters that were down in that rock, and it was almost impossible to drive them out. And so a rock, a place of security. A rock is also a place of a firm foundation. And you recall what is said in Psalm 40 and verse 2, he has taken my feet out of the miry clay, and he has placed them upon a rock. How important it is to check on the foundation before you start building. Unfortunately, in the building, the church building that we occupy, when it was built in the 50s, no one bothered to check on that. And it was built in an area that was a landfill. And consequently, a number of years ago, we began to notice that the back wall was starting to move out a slight distance from the rest of the building. And it was beginning to tilt in this way. Why? Because the ground was sinking. The foundation was not secure. So some rather serious problems. Fortunately, we were able to bring in, at considerable expense, people to come in, go under, and then pump in concrete and so forth under that to give strength to that back wall before the whole thing fell away. But you want to be sure that you've got a good, strong foundation, and rock provides that. And then a hiding place. You remember what happened with Moses. And Moses asked to see the glory of God. And God said, I cannot let you look upon my face, but I will let you look at my hinder parts as I pass by. And remember what he did? He placed Moses in the rock. And it was there, Moses in the rock, where God revealed something of himself to him. But I think also of what happened with Moses and the rock in the wilderness. And remember when the children of Israel needed water and Moses was supposed to speak to the rock and he didn't do that. He struck the rock, but nevertheless, water came forth out of the rock. The rock was a place of refreshment. So I think in all of these ways, that's the rock represents different dimensions of those concepts. But certainly here, David has in mind that rock that is a rock of refuge, a fortress. But notice also what David says. He's in verse 1. He says, never let me be ashamed. Don't let me be ashamed. Now, it was not because David was concerned about his own reputation, his ego. He was concerned about the reputation of God. It was for thy sake. Don't let me be ashamed for thy sake. I don't want to bring reproach on your name by what is happening to me because I have boasted in the Lord. I think an excellent example of that is what happens with Ezra. And Ezra has been allowed by the king to travel to Jerusalem. And he's going to take up gold and silver, and a whole group of people are going with him. And as he's getting ready to make the journey and to go across the desert land there, and there are a lot of marauders who are there, and great danger. And the king says to Ezra, why don't I give you a guard to take you across all this wasteland and to give you protection to make sure that you get there safely with your little ones and all of this gold and silver that you're taking? And Ezra said, I would have been ashamed to ask of the king a guard or to take from the king a guard. Why? Because he had boasted in the Lord. He had boasted how great his God was and how God would provide protection and look after him. And now he should turn to the king and say, will you please send a guard with us while we go across the desert? So in essence, what Ezra was saying, the reputation of God was on the line, and I don't want to be an embarrassment there. I don't want to cause God to be embarrassed by what I do. But you'll notice in verse 6, David here moves to his affirmation of trust in the Lord. It is a trust in Jehovah, the covenant-keeping God. David goes through and he delineates some past experience. David could say, I have had past experiences in trusting God, and I know that he is reliable. Notice verse 7, what he says. Thou hast considered my trouble. God has thought about David. It's not a matter of, where's David down here? What's going on? Did I lose track of David somewhere? David says, God, I know you are considering my ways. I know you are looking at what is taking place. I know you are interested in me. Remember what happened with the disciples when they were out on the sea and the storm came up? I find that a most phenomenal statement that they make. Carest thou not that we perish? This is the Lord who's in the boat with them. What a presumptuous statement that is. When they say, Lord, don't you care one bit about us after all that the Lord had done? And the assumption, of course, we're going to perish out here and the Lord's sleeping in the boat and he really just doesn't care. Don't you care one thing about us anyway? That's what's being said. But you know, if we're really honest with ourselves, sometimes we respond that way, don't we? Pressures come, difficulties mount, hard times are there. And we say, Lord, don't you really care? Don't you know what I'm going through? Yes, he does. And David says, thou considerest my way. The Lord knew his soul when he was in adversity. He did not allow his enemies to triumph. And he tells us he had put him in a wide place. We think of narrow places where circumstances start squeezing in on us. confining us, constricting us, putting pressure upon us. And David says, the Lord has put me in a wide place, as he looked back in his experiences. So there was a track record that was there. There were past experiences that he could rely upon in the midst of this particular trouble. But still, in spite of all of that, in spite of the knowledge that God was his refuge, in spite of the knowledge that God had helped him in the past, there was still an internal struggle going on as he felt sorry for himself. And we find that in verses 9 through 13. And in those verses, we find grief. We find David sighing. We find David complaining about being a reproach to others, a broken vessel. Verse 13, there's a reference there to those who are trying to take away his life. Lord, they're trying to kill me out there. Are you really aware of this? But notice in verse 14, he comes back to a right perspective. And let me just say, that's not, you know, that's a normal human experience that is taking place in verses 9 through 13. When those difficulties come, that we do tend to look inward and we do tend to start feeling sorry for ourselves. Remember what happened with Jeremiah? And Jeremiah says, you know, Lord, do you remember me? I'm on your side. Those, all of them out there, they're trying to kill me. And in fact, not only are they trying to kill me, they're trying to kill me and they want to wipe out my entire generation so no one will ever know that I was even here. And Lord, I'm on your side and all of these things are happening. Have you got the sides mixed up, God? And God says, Jeremiah, if you think you've got troubles now, just wait. Things are going to get worse. Well, that's not exactly encouraging, but that was nevertheless the response of God to Jeremiah in that. So Jeremiah was feeling pretty sorry for himself. But in fact, there were more difficult times to come. But God was working all the way through it. His right perspective remembered in verse 14. But I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God. Thou art my God. Simple statement, but profound in every aspect. Thou art my God. And when you put that together with what he says earlier, thou art my rock, thou art my God. There is the place of encouragement. There is the place of security. There is the solid foundation. There is the hiding place. Thou art my God, thou art my rock. And he continues it with, my times are in thy hand. Your times, students. Your times as graduates. Your times as you set out and begin a family. Your times as you mature and get older. All of those times are nestled here in the hand of the Lord. And he's not going to forget you. He is still your God. He is still your refuge. He is still your place of security. And finally, David, as he comes to verse 19, reminds himself of the goodness of God. Oh, how great is thy goodness, which thou hast laid up for them that fear thee. How great is thy goodness. So once again, David comes back to that positive dimension of reflecting on the greatness and goodness of God. I am sure that at the ceremonies at Virginia Tech, the memorial services, in the testimonies that were given, things that were said at graduation, I'm certain that there were those who had spiritual responses, and among that entire gathering, there were those indeed who were trusting the Lord. So I don't want to be negative about what took place, but I think it's very important as a reminder that we realize our trust cannot be just in getting together as a group. It cannot be just in what we have as a student body. It cannot be just in a fight song. But our confidence, our trust has to be in the Lord. There is our resource. Thou art my God. Thou art my rock.
You've been listening to the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was Dr. DeWitt Jones, Chairman Emeritus of the Division of Speech Communication at BJU. For a cassette or compact disc copy of today's message, send a check for $6 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.